So welcome to another episode of the Leadership Enigma, and we are going to continue a theme as we explore the entrepreneurial and founder mindset. Now, research suggests that between 2013 and 2019, 30% of startups go out of business. Why? But yet we work with loads of corporates who want their employees to have the mindset of the founder and the mindset of the entrepreneur. Again, the question is why? So we need to talk to someone who can answer those questions. And I'm delighted that I have a guest from New Orleans, Michelle Saylor Tucker, who has sold over 1,000 businesses. So she will be able to help us with all of those questions. Come back to me just after this.
In a constantly changing world, today is as simple as it gets. You're listening to The Leadership Enigma, a podcast to explore, experiment, and power up your leadership to make the difference to your business, your people, and your success. Whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, or corporate executive, each week we dig deep into global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts, and disruptors. Now, here's your host, Adam Pacifico.
Hey, Michelle. Now, you're smiling after that intro, as you're probably wondering what was all that about. But welcome to the Leadership Enigma.
Thank you, Adam. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's great to have you. I know we chatted a couple of weeks ago, so it's a huge hello from New Orleans. I know that you've been featured in Inc., Forbes, USA Magazine, Fox Business News, CNN, radio and TV. So I'm delighted that you're now with me on the Leadership Enigma. So just to tell us a little bit about what you're doing at the moment, because I introduced you as someone who's sold over 1,000 businesses, but there's a story there somewhere. So just start us off. What are you doing right now?
So what am I doing right now? Selling businesses. So my story, I'll make it quick. I've always been into entrepreneurship. Yep. I've always, you know, been passionate about small business. So I've owned many different businesses and many verticals. I did kind of get stuck in corporate America, where I went to work for a Fortune 500 company called Xerox. And Xerox actually recruited me from the competition because they couldn't beat me.
Okay.
So Xerox hired me, and within 6 months, my nickname became the closer. Every time they couldn't get a deal closed, they would say, well, call Michelle. She'll get it closed. She can close anything. And then my supervisor came to me and said, Michelle, you really should apply for the regional vice president position. She said, you'll never get it because you've only been here for 6 months, and Xerox policy is 2 years before they promote.
Right.
And she said, and plus you're going to be interviewing with a lot of other people who have been here for, you know, many years. And I said, well, if I'm, why would I interview for something I'm never going to get? You know, it sounds like a colossal waste of time. And she said, because of the experience, she said, you'll learn more throughout this entire process than you have ever learned not doing it. And she said, it's a 3-month, you know, process, which it was. It's a grueling 3-month process.
Right.
Where we had to meet with all the high level executives, do Q&As with executives, presentations, demonstrations of the Xerox equipment. And I ended up getting the position.
Wow.
So I guess I truly am the closer, because I was told that I broke all rules, or Xerox broke all rules to move me up to that position. And I always tell big companies, you know, if you have a closer, don't promote them to management. Leave them in closing, because that's what their core competencies are. And so when I went to management, you know, I like management. I like leadership. I don't like management and leadership in a Fortune 500 company.
Gotcha.
Because there's, you know, you have meetings to have follow-up meetings to schedule more meetings, and you can't make decisions. You can't, it's so hard to solve problems because you have to go, you know, you have to round table it, and you have to go, you know, through chain of command, and it just takes forever to get anything done. So I ended up leaving Xerox and transitioning into franchise sales, franchise development, franchise consulting. Mm-hmm. And then my buyers kept saying, well, gosh, do you have an existing business? And I'm like, I kept saying, no, no, no. And I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm like, why am I saying no? I should be saying yes.
That's right.
Yes. For the universe. The universe likes yes. So I should be saying yes. So that's when I transitioned into buying, selling, fixing, growing businesses. Really, really selling businesses. But then I learned very quickly that what Steve Forbes says is true. 8 out of 10 businesses will not sell. That's 80%. So then I said, gosh, if I don't fix these businesses, if I don't, you know, grow them and put them on a build to sell program, I'm going to starve to death. So that's where I really, you know, transitioned into buying, selling, fixing, growing companies. So I partner with business owners, investing my money, my time, my energies, my efforts, also buy businesses and flip them. Plus we sell them and merge them.
Gotcha.
So that's our core competency.
Well, there you have it. And as you say, you put your own money into many of these ventures. So there's skin in the game. But let me just backtrack slightly, because as you were entering this field, I know you've got many years experience now in this field, you spoke about the fact that 80% were unable to sell. As you started to explore, did you find out why was that? What was the blockage? What was the stopper for so many businesses failing to sell?
So the mistakes are pretty common. The number one mistake that business owners make and why their business is not sellable is because they never think about their exit. They never think about selling their business. Therefore, they never plan their exit. They never think about it until a catastrophic event has occurred.
Right.
That could be an internal event, which could be health issues, divorce, partner disputes, external, COVID. And the worst time to sell your business is during a catastrophic event, because your business is typically turning downward.
Right.
The best time to sell is when your business is doing well, when your business is in its prime. So it's very important to build your exit, to plan your exit from day one of buying or starting your business. And I, you know what, I've met thousands upon thousands of business owners, and I've never met one business owner that has actually planned their exit from the beginning. Yep. So that's the number one reason that businesses are not sellable.
Right. Now, some people talk about it as the curse of the founder, because their businesses are almost like their children. So the mere thought of exiting or selling is abhorrent to them. So how do you work with founders to start to change that mindset?
That's a big issue too, is the mindset. So it's number one, not planning.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is the mindset that they do look at their business as their child, because, you know, think about it. Most business owners spend more time with their business than they do their own family.
Yeah.
So they really do think of it as their child. And so they're so emotionally connected to it, and they're not really treating it like a valuable asset that it is. And they're not putting the energy into, you know, building an asset that somebody actually wants to buy. The other reason that businesses don't sell is because business owners haven't really created a valuable asset that somebody wants to pay for.
Right.
And so business owners need to stop thinking about their business as their baby, and they really need to think of it as the most valuable asset in their life. It's strange to me, because we plan for everything else. If you have children, you know, you plan where they're going to go to preschool, elementary, middle school, high school, college, you know, how many grandkids they're going to give you. But we don't plan for our business.
And why is that? Are they stuck in the weeds? Are they just too emotionally tied in?
I think it's a combination of things that, you know, they're passionate about their business, so they love it, so they think they're going to do it forever. But Adam, we both know nothing lasts forever.
Oh boy.
So they think they're going to do it forever, but nothing lasts forever.
Yeah.
And then number two is they think of it as their child, they're too emotionally connected, and they are stuck in the weeds, you know? They're stuck in the day-to-day, so they never really plan for the future. And, you know, what do financial advisors do? They put us on a plan. If we say we want to retire and we want to be able to live on, you know, $500,000 a year, they put us on a roadmap to get us there, right?
Yeah.
That's what I do with my business owners.
Now,
as I put them on a roadmap to get them to their desired price tag so that they can sell their business, take that money and invest it and retire.
Now, do you find that you have an upswing in people coming to get your expert help when the times are good or when the times are bad and perhaps it's too late? Because obviously we're coming out of a global pandemic. You and I have spoken before. Now, you're in New Orleans, so you've lived through Katrina, Hurricane Katrina as well.
Yeah, I have, yeah.
So help me with that. You know, how does that balance work between the good times and the bad times? Because it's constantly changing.
It is constantly changing. And unfortunately, sellers come to us when the catastrophic event has occurred. So that's typically in the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, that's during the pandemic. That's during Hurricane Katrina, instead of coming to us when times are good. And you really should be coming to us when times are good, when you're in the middle of your prime, not when you're in the middle of your chaos.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, I'm in New Orleans. I'm not from New Orleans. I'm from California. But I I went through Hurricane Katrina. About 95-98% of my clients, their businesses literally went underwater, like literally went underwater, you know, and that taught me a very valuable lesson back then. That taught me, you know, to diversify. That taught me not just to diversify in industry, or diversifying, you know, in the stock market, but to diversify in location. So not just to have a business in Louisiana, so now I have businesses in Texas. You know, I've had businesses in California, South Africa. And that's just taught me to really diversify in different states, even countries, because if something happens, then I have this over here. And that's one of the biggest mistakes that business owners make is they don't diversify. You know, like look at the restaurant industry. These owners have one restaurant. All their eggs are in that restaurant's basket. They have no other congruent revenue streams. They have no other income coming in. And they have maybe 1 to 3 months of working capital.
Yeah.
So they are not positioned for a catastrophic event. Business owners have to really learn from this pandemic. And they got to really learn that they have to have multiple streams of revenue. They have to diversify. And they have to have at least 1 year's worth of working capital.
Right. And it doesn't just need a catastrophic event, does it, Michelle? Because times change so quickly. I mean, for us, maybe Brexit is the next thing on the horizon for us to actually deal with post the pandemic. Right. But it's always going to be something. So why?
It's always going to be something. Yeah. That's right.
Why are business leaders continually caught out then? Because history tends to repeat itself.
Right. And one thing that you said in the beginning of the show is that 30% of startups go out of business.
Yeah.
Well, when I wrote my first book in 2013, Sell Your Business for More Than It's Worth, I did the research back then and learned that 85-95% of all startups will go out of business. Wow. 95%, that's common in America. And when I wrote Exit Rich in 2019, 2020 and did the exact same research, I learned that only 30% of those startups are going out of business, only 30%. So that's great news for startups. However, in America, out of 26.9 million businesses, something like that, those businesses are 27.6 million businesses. Those businesses have been in business 10 years or longer. 70% of them will go out of business. Now, the business landscape has flip-flopped in the United States. It used to be if you made it the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, you're golden and you're going to be in business forever.
Yeah.
Well, now you're going out of business. I mean, in America, they talk about the big public companies all the time, like Toys R Us in business 75 years goes out of business. Kmart, Steinmart, JCPenney's, Pier 1, Godiva is closing down 1,500 locations. So, but they're not talking about the private companies on every street corner in every town in every state.
Yeah.
So these business owners are exiting poor. And they're selling for pennies on a dollar, closing their business, or even worse, filing bankruptcy.
And this is their lifetime work, isn't it? And I'm seeing that here as well in Europe.
This is their lifetime work. And that's why I wrote Exit Rich. I mean, Exit Rich couldn't be a better time right now to have Exit Rich come out.
Yeah, tell us about that.
And those numbers, by the way, are before the pandemic.
Right.
Before the pandemic. So Exit Rich is all about planning your exit strategy. From day one of buying or selling a business, it's all about mindset. It's all about deciding when you should sell. And it's all about, you know, mapping it out so that you can get your desired sales price so you can, you know, finally retire and, you know, get the life you deserve of.
Yeah.
And also how to build your business on the infrastructure with what we call the six P's.
Yes, I want to deal with the six P's. But just before I get to the six P's, obviously you see, you know, founders and leaders within all of these businesses. And this podcast focused a lot on leaders and leadership. And you're going to see good leaders and bad leaders. And, you know, we talked a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, where you talked about that some of those leaders that you see are control freaks. They don't hire for their own weaknesses. They're too emotionally tied. Mm-hmm. But if someone was about to start with great passion their own business, what kind of advice would you give them from a leadership perspective, just so they could perhaps get things in place and start as they mean to go on?
Okay, well, two big things. Yep. Number one is, because I think leaders have to have a plan, right?
Yep.
And most leaders are the visionary. They're not the integrators, they're the visionary. So leaders have to focus on their strengths, hire their weaknesses, not get stuck in the day-to-day, you know, figure out what your core competencies are and work on the business, not in the business. And I want to tell you before we get into the six P's, how you should start your end from the beginning.
Okay.
Is that okay
Please.
To talk about that?
Yeah.
And that's called the STGPS exit model. So from the moment of starting or buying your business, you need to have an end game in mind. You know, when you want to drive somewhere in London, what's the first thing you do if you've never been there before?
I want to know where I'm going, right?
You pull out your Google map and you plug in your destination,
yep.
right? So that's the problem with business owners. They don't have a destination. So they drive around in circles up and down the financial hills, ending up nowhere.
Right.
So you need to know where you're going. Otherwise, you're never going to get there. So number one, you need a destination, your end game, your desired sales price. And I always tell my clients, Adam, just pick a number. If you want to sell for $20 million, great, that's a number. And leaders, entrepreneurs get hung up on a number. Don't get hung up on a number. Just pick a number. It doesn't matter. You might hit it. You might not.
Right.
So let's say you want to sell for $20 million. Then the next thing the GPS exit model needs to know is your location, your current location. Where are you starting from? Or in other words, what is your business worth today, your valuation? And I don't know if you know this, but most business owners never even get a valuation on their business. I met with a guy who's been in business 50 years. He's never had his company evaluated. You know, we go to the doctor once a year to get a physical checkup to make sure our heart's still ticking and we're still kicking. We drive our car to the shop to get an annual checkup, but we never get an annual business valuation checkup. It is financial suicide.
Wow.
There are events that increase your valuation and events to decrease your valuation. Like this pandemic is decreasing your valuation for a lot of industries. So you must know what your business is worth on a year-to-year basis. So let's say you're worth $3 million or $5 million. Let's say you're worth $5 million, you want to sell for $20 million. Now you need to know time frame. You're not going to do it in a year, let's say 10 years. Now, what do you need to know? You need to know, well, who's your buyers going to be? You're going to have to reverse engineer to sell a $20 million business. So who's your buyers going to be? There's five types of buyers.
Okay.
So I'll tell you who your buyers are not going to be. It's not going to be a first-time buyer because they buy small businesses. Turnaround specialists, second type of buyer, they buy distressed assets.
Mm-hmm.
Third type of buyer is private equity groups. These are PEGs. They buy based upon platform and add-ons. You have to have an EBITDA of at least, you know, over $1 million for them to even consider your company for sale.
Right.
And then you got strategic competitors. Sometimes they pay the highest value, the highest multiple, because they're buying synergies.
Right.
And then you got your sophisticated serial entrepreneur that is industry agnostic and just chases EBITDA, chases cash flow. And so then what you need to know is, well, where do the financials have to be? For me to sell a business for $20 million, where's the top line need to be? Where's profit margins? Most importantly, the EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization, where do those numbers need to be? So to sell for $5 million, you need to have at least $3 million to $5 million in EBITDA.
Yeah.
And then you need to know, well, what characteristics are they looking for? What synergies are they looking for? What will make a buyer pay more for my business? And then the most important thing is to know your why. You know,
start with the why.
Everybody has to have a why. It's got to be the why, because at the end of the day, if it was easy to sell a $20 million company, everybody would be doing it. So you got to have a strong enough why to keep you in the game, to keep you motivated, to keep you weathering all the financial storms.
Yep.
And then what you do is you, now that you know your numbers, now that you have your plan, because, you know, business owners don't fail to plan, they plan to fail. And now you can build your business based upon the six P's to meet those buyer-specific criteria.
Gotcha. So we're going to move into the six P's, and I'm going to ask you to give us a little bit of context about why you created the six P's. I think it's probably obvious to me why you created the six P's with what we're talking about, because so many founders, as you say, are visionaries. They're gifted in their insight as regards perhaps a product or a service, but the devil's in the detail, and that they need somebody else for. So tell us why you created the six P's.
I created this six piece because I noticed that it doesn't matter what the industry is. The problems are the same.
Okay.
So when a company is not making money, it's because they're not doing something in one of these P's.
All right.
And the industry is irrelevant. Again, it's about the mistakes that business owners make are always the same. And valuations, we center our valuations around these six P's because, you know, it is important to evaluate a business based upon the EBITDA, but more important than the cash flow of the business is those synergies and what synergies buyers are willing to pay top dollar for.
Okay. So take us through. We're going to take our time on this so that we're clear on this. So what's the first P then, Michelle?
So the first P is people, like you said earlier, you know, business owner. And that's the number two reason that businesses don't sell is because the business is 1,000% dependent upon the owner. You take the owner out of the business, there is no business. Mm. So people is very important. You got to focus on your strengths, hire your weaknesses, and make sure you have the people in the right seat. You know, you don't build a business, you build people, and people build a business. So you got to have the right people in the right positions. And then you got to ask the who question, Adam. Who opens the door? Who handles customer service? Who handles marketing, legal, accounting, manufacturing, logistics, distribution, environmental? The list goes on and on. The clue is that you should never be next to the who.
Right. Okay.
So all of your listeners need to like write down all of the things that have to get done in a day. The who, I call it the who test. And then I got to fill out who does each task. Okay. But it shouldn't be you because you need to build a business that runs without you.
Yes.
And if you're trying to sell a business for, you know, 5 million, 10 million, you have to have a layer of management in between. So you got to make sure that you have that chief operating officer, general manager in place, that chief financial officer, et cetera. So people's number one. Okay. You will never get anywhere without people, because if you don't have people, you have a job. And a lot of business owners have created a glorified job in which they go to work at every day versus a business that actually works for them.
Right.
You know, we have a dentist that came into us and wants us to sell their practice. They've been in business 45 years, one dentist and three dental hygienists. And I told him, I said, well, if we sell it, you have to stay for 2 to 3 years and the price is going to be attached to that. He goes, I'm not staying. I go, well, if you're not staying, you're not selling.
Right.
Because the minute you leave, the patients leave.
Yeah. God, that's so true. All right. So number one is people. What's the second P?
Product.
Product.
So product is like your product, your service, your industry. You have to ask yourself, is your product, your industry on the way up, on the way out? Is it thriving or dying? Okay. Do you have an Amazon up here or do you have a Blockbuster near about to go bust? And unfortunately, because of the pandemic, there are a lot of industries that are going bust right now. But, you know, that doesn't mean just because you're in an industry that's dying that you go home and curl up into a fetal position. It means that you just got to get creative. You know, you really should call an expert, a mentor, somebody like you, somebody like myself, and start asking different questions. You're never going to get different results if you keep doing things the same. You know, one of the number one reason that 70% of businesses are going out of business after being in business for 10 years is because they stopped doing what I call AIM. AIM is always innovate and market. Always innovate and market. And so in product, you always have to innovate. The problem is like, Toys R Us, they did nothing different in 75 years.
Yeah.
Blockbuster sold Netflix and they didn't do anything different. They had the opportunity to buy Netflix and they never innovated. And that's the problem with these business owners that have been in their business. You cannot be stuck to your concept.
Yep.
And ask yourself these three transformational questions. Number one, what business am I in? Amazon did this in the 90s. What business are we in? They said, we sell books. We're in a bookselling business. Number two, what do you do really, really well, better than anybody else? Amazon said we do fulfillment better than anyone else. Number three, what business should I be in? Should you be in? Amazon said we should be in a fulfillment business. And those three questions, see, these are transformational. Business owners have to get out of transactional.
Yes.
And get into transformational. And these three questions is what transformed Amazon into a small bookseller to a multi-billion dollar worldwide conglomerate.
It's an incredible story, isn't it? And I think, you know, one of the things at the moment that when we speak to even people working in large corporates is that they're in survival mode right now. So they've stopped thriving and they're surviving and people want to very quickly move back into thriving mode. Okay, so we've got people and product for the first two P's. The third P, I think, is process. Is that right?
Process. Yeah. Okay. You say process. I said process.
I know. Tomato, process.
My Canadians say process.
There we go.
It doesn't matter. It's the same. So processes, however you want to call it. You know, it's very similar.
We're international here, Michelle.
Well, that's what I love about Zoom. You know, we can meet people all around the world without getting on a plane. But at any rate, so processes, I'm going to say processes.
You are now. See what's happened?
So processes are like exit strategies. Business owners don't think about them, Adam, until something bad has happened.
Okay.
So processes are the same way. You know, we are selling a manufacturing business and an employee got hurt on a manufacturing floor and it's a catastrophic event. the company's going to be sued. They probably will go in bankruptcy court when we're trying to sell them.
Yep.
And the owner says to me, I need a process for that. And I'm like, you're a little late. Yeah. You needed one before
the,
this.
The horse has bolted. The horse is gone.
The horse is it's gone. So processes need to be designed from the beginning of buying or starting a business. And this is where most people get it wrong, Adam. Most people design the processes around their own agenda.
Right.
Let me give you an example.
Okay.
Chiropractors' offices. We're open Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 9 to 12. Closed from 12 to 3. Open from 3 to 5. Tuesday, we're open noon. Friday, we're open. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody can ever go to them because they're designing their processes on their hours when what works best for them. You got to design your processes with the client experience in mind. McDonald's did this back in the 40s. McDonald's started a fast food restaurant. Did you ever watch the movie The Founder?
I haven't, but that was about the start of McDonald's, wasn't it?
That's about the start of McDonald's with the McDonald brothers.
Yes.
And then Ray Kroc came in and everybody says he stole McDonald's. He did not steal McDonald's. He came in and grew it, and they didn't want to grow it, you know? And so anyway, McDonald's started McDonald's back in the 40s around the customer experience. They said, we want our customers to experience great tasting food that's hot, that's fast. You can eat at a McDonald's anywhere in the world and get the same experience. It never says it's going to be healthy. It never says it's going to be organic, right? So have you ever dealt with a company where you're like so frustrated? You know, maybe you had to talk to six different people to try to get some resolve on your problem. You're like, I'll never do business with them again.
Yeah.
It's because they design the processes around their own agenda. So you need to design the processes around your own customer experience. If you don't, your competitors will be happy to do it for you.
Yeah, that's the lack of customer centricity, isn't it, Michelle?
That's right. Okay. And you need to deliver wow experiences. I mean, at High Point University, they have a director of wow and a director of unwow.
Okay. I quite like that. Director of wow. That's a pretty cool job title.
A director of wow and a director of unwow. So very important, right? So your processes have to be designed with the customer experience in mind. They have to be productive, efficient. And guess what, Adam? They have to be documented. You need to have some policy and procedure manuals. You need to have SOP checklist. You need to have those employee handbooks, those non-compete for upper level management, because buyers will not buy the business without all this documentation.
Yeah, and this is all the stuff that people don't want to do. The devil in the detail.
They don't want to do because no business owner likes paperwork.
Yeah.
No business owner likes the detail.
I'm guilty as well of that,
Michelle. We're entrepreneurs. We like to grow.
Okay, so that's the first three P's. The fourth one.
So the fourth one is the highest value driver. This will get you a higher multiple than any other P.
Right.
So businesses that have an EBITDA, now this is America, I'm not sure about UK, but businesses that have under $1 million in EBITDA typically trade for a multiple of under 5.
Okay.
Okay. Businesses that are over $1 million in EBITDA typically will trade for a multiple of over 5, depending upon the synergies. Get this P right, and you could get maybe a multiple of 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10. All right, this is proprietary.
Okay.
There are 6 pillars to proprietary. Now, this one's going to take me the longest to explain. The other two P's are short. So branding. Branding is huge. The more well-branded you are, the more I can sell your business for, as long as your brand is relevant in the mind of the consumers. Meaning, is anybody going to pay money for Blockbuster?
That would be a no.
That would be a no. The biggest, most valuable brand in the world is?
Apple,
yay, you win.
Oh, I'm good at this, right?
You are good at this. Maybe we'll do like a game show,
I think
an
so.
Exit Rich game
I know,
show.
Is this like Jeopardy? It's the wrong way around, isn't it?
So Apple is worth $249 billion without EBITDA, without inventory, without assets, accounts receivable, real estates, or anything else. $249 billion. What does that tell you? That tells you build your brand and you'll get a much bigger exit.
Okay.
Trademarks are huge. Trademark your company name. Trademark your slogans. Trademark your podcast. Trademark anything that's your USP, unique selling proposition. Now, here's a mistake that business owners make in America. They'll go to Texas or California and they get a state trademark, but they never check the federal database to make sure that name's available.
Right.
So after being in business 5, 10, 15 years, they receive a cease and desist letter in the mail and they have to stop using that company name.
Right. Oh, see, the lawyer in me then goes, ouch.
That lawyer in you goes, ding, 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 I'm charging a bunch of money.
Possibly as well.
But I always tell my clients, you know, you can hire a lawyer and throw money at it, but in all likelihood, you're probably going to lose. Yeah. And then they got to start the rebranding process all over again. So in America, it's only like $1,500, $2,000 to get those federal trademarks. So get the federal trademarks and protect your IP. Also for like products, you know, like I've had restaurants, I've had, you know, companies that have products that sell to grocery store chains, and they have trademarks, federal trademarks for each one of their products. That adds huge value. Patents. Have you ever watched Shark Tank? Do y'all watch Shark Tank in the UK?
Yeah, we have Dragon's Den here, but I've watched both versions.
So what does every investor always ask?
Do you own the legal rights to whatever it is that you're trying to sell us?
Do you have a patent on this? Do you have a utility patent? Do you have a patent pending? Oh, I'll give you an offer contingent upon the patent. So what does that tell you? Patents are very valuable. We once sold a manufacturing company that was losing money, but they had 18 patents. So we sold it for $18 million.
Wow.
Okay. So patents are huge. Then contracts, manufacturing contracts, vendor contracts, distribution contracts, franchisor contracts that has franchisees. Client contracts are extremely valuable, especially the ones that have recurring revenue and a subscription model.
I bet.
Because buyers love to buy companies with recurring revenue. Now, here's the caveat to contracts. In the United States, again, I don't know about UK, never claimed to be an expert in the UK, but in the United States, 99.8% of all sales are asset sales. So most business owners don't have the two-sentence transferability clause that says this contract is transferable to the new entity.
Right.
And so if your buyer's not willing to transfer, you know, to a stock sale and your clients won't sign a consent to transfer agreement, you're in big trouble. So just, you know, be a step ahead of the game and make sure you get that two-sentence transferability clause. Databases are big.
Yes.
Huge. Databases. Facebook paid $19 billion for WhatsApp, and WhatsApp was making how much?
Not a lot.
Not only were they making zero, they were hemorrhaging. But they had a synergy. See, this is all about synergies. They had 1 billion users, and Facebook knew they could monetize and they could ROI off that acquisition. So they went ahead and purchased it for $19
billion. Wow.
Celebrity endorsements are very big. So anytime you can get Oprah, you can get any type of celebrity, that's huge.
Maybe my next guest. I don't know. She might be busy. I'm not sure yet.
Competitors, strategics will pay more money for celebrity endorsements because their thought process is, oh, I can get my products in front of Oprah. I can get my products in front of, right? So the other big thing is radio personality endorsements because they can only endorse one vertical at a time. Otherwise, they completely lose credibility.
Okay.
So it's very hard to get that radio real estate that I call. Okay. And then online presence. You know, if anybody's got the top, can get any of the top three positions on Etsy, Wayfair, Amazon, those are big, big, big assets that competitors or strategics will look for. Yeah. So when we're evaluating a business, we go through these six P's and we identify the synergies, plus we identify what buyers are willing to pay top dollar because we also look at what can buyers cut. If we're selling a manufacturing business that has a distribution center that's costing them $1 million a year, and this manufacturing company, the buyer has distribution all over the U.S., they can cut that $1 million a year distribution center because they don't need it. And that just increased their EBITDA. So we always look at those angles.
Those synergies. So this
and plus,
is...
And plus, can they take advantage of economies of scale?
Such as
purchase power, purchasing power. You know, the more a franchisor, the more franchisees that they have, the more than that they can buy at a lower cost when they're buying food or when they're buying, you know, any type of inventory.
Yeah. It's like the big supermarkets. Yeah. They work on that premise, don't they? Because they just are buying so much. So that's the fourth P, proprietary assets. And there's a lot in that as well.
There is a lot.
Which leads us to number five.
Which is patrons. Patrons is your customer base in the United States. The golden rule is 80% of your revenue comes from 20% of your clients.
Right, yes.
Well, the problem with that is lose a couple of clients and you're in big trouble. You know, we're selling an advertising marketing company for $10 million. They have five clients, only five.
Right.
But they had five casinos. So they were doing business with big time casinos, and they lost two while we were trying to sell them. They were no longer sellable because the revenues dropped in half.
Wow.
But we merged them with another media company.
And that was successful.
It was, yeah.
Okay.
But just because you have customer concentration doesn't mean it's not sellable. It's just much more difficult.
Yeah,
like we sold an oil manufacturing business that was appraised for $9.8 million. We have 550 buyers. We narrowed it down to 12 letter of intents. They had 65% contract with BP. So 65% of their revenue was tapped in BP. They lose BP, they're in big trouble.
Mm, yeah.
So most of my buyers were very concerned about that kind of risk, but I found a strategic who has similar products and similar services have been trying to get in BP for decades and can never get in. So his thought process was, I buy BP, I'm in the door. They yeah. have to take my other products and services.
Right. So it was an enabler.
And so he paid $15 million for 70% of the company when it was appraised for 9.8. It's 126% more than appraised price.
Wow. That'll be a happy founder for sure. All right.
Yep.
So that takes us to number six.
Profits. The most important thing to all entrepreneurs is profits. Now, Adam, I put profits last because you will never be profitable if you haven't figured out all these other five P's. If
right.
you're not running on all these other five P's, operating on all of them, you won't be profitable. I have clients that come to me and say, Michelle, I have a profit problem. I'm like, no, you have a people problem.
Right.
Now you have a process problem. So profits, lack of profits is never the problem. It's always a symptom of.
So that's almost at the end of the funnel. If you don't get the other P's right, then there's no profits coming at the end of the funnel.
Yeah, because you can have a lot of business coming in. I mean, I partner with a graphics company that was turning down 6,000 clients a year.
Turning down.
Wow. So they had no business. They had no problem getting the business. The problem is they had a problem fulfilling the orders because they didn't have people.
Right.
They didn't have people and they didn't have processes. So they had husband and wife and one employee trying to do all these orders, you know, it's a graphics company. And they didn't have the people or the processes, so they were turning down business. I ended up partnering with them.
So this is a jam-packed episode, which I love, and I'm only ever scratching the surface when I talk to great people, and it's really kind of you to join me on this. So how can people get hold of you if they want to know more, or if you've really whet their appetite to say, hang on, I need to start thinking about these things?
So I would say two things. Number one, they need to go get Exit Rich today.
Okay. Now, where can they get that?
Yeah. So I would go get it at exitrichbook.com. Now you can get on Amazon, but all the goodies,
okay, we like a goodie,
is at exitrichbook.com. So we're in pre-sale. The book launch date is in June.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to wait till June. You can go to exitrichbook.com today, order the book for $24.79, which is actually less than Amazon.
Right.
We will email you the digital download so you can start reading the book today. We will mail the hardcover to your doorstep. Plus, we will give you a lifetime membership into the Exit Rich Book Club, where we have video content, video training, and documents. So documents to run, to operate your business, like employee handbooks, non-competes, organizational charts, documents to run your company, sell your company, sample letter of intent, sample purchase agreement, sample due diligence checklist, and sample closing documents. These documents are there for your review and your download. I'm telling you, Adam, these are worth more, probably between $25,000 to $30,000 to recreate all these documents.
Right. And there it is. So it's a ready resource for people, and they can start to think about exiting their business before a catastrophic event, right?
Right.
Okay.
And then we're also giving them 30 days free membership into Club CEOs, which is an entrepreneur mastermind, where we ask those transformational questions and we help business owners. You know, it's not just about exiting. We help business owners really build a sustainable business that's scalable. So when you are ready, you do have something that's sellable.
Okay. So just give us that www address again, Michelle, so we've got it.
ExitRichBook.com.
Great. And then if people wanted to connect with you, what's the best way for that?
So they can text Michelle to 888-526-5750. All my social media websites, pop up so they can follow me and connect with me on LinkedIn. And my main website is SeilerTucker.com.
Look how organized you are. It's marvelous, isn't it? So now you're a friend of the Leadership Enigma, which is great. Listen, it's been absolutely fabulous to talk to you. But I just wanted to say to you, thank you so much for being a fab guest on the Leadership Enigma. And I hope maybe you'll think about coming back to us and telling us
a little bit more about what it's like
selling businesses and working with all of these leaders and founders when the world isn't quite as bonkers as it is. Would you do that for us?
Absolutely. I would love to come back. Thank you so much for having me.
Michelle, you're a superstar. Thank you very much.
Join us again next week for more essential insights on the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with your host on LinkedIn or via our website, www.pca-global.com. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Thanks for listening.